Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. How does Vladimir Putin see his country's place in the world? At the recent meeting of the Valdai discussion group, he did as much and much more. He critiqued the West and its neoliberal ideology, and he made it clear no one can sit out the coming storm facing the international system. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we have George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, George, let's start out with you in Budapest here. Before we talk about what Vladimir Putin had to say at the annual Valdai discussion group, I was just thinking as we started here, is that so much is commented upon what Putin has never said, and very little is commented on what he actually says here. So that's my segue into his commentary. It was very interesting commentary on the West and its ideology, neoliberalism. And I think it was also kind of a sermon on how the West has portrayed the Enlightenment.
You're absolutely right, Peter, because the way the media presented Putin's speech was entirely incorrect and misleading, because like the way it was the media say, Putin first threw down the gauntlet to the West. Putin did not throw down any kind of a gauntlet, because what he had said is that, on the contrary, it is the West today that is out of sorts with the rest of the world, the West in the grip of a neoliberal ideology. And he also made clear that this ideology is adhered to largely by a kind of minority elite that runs the West, and that is not actually in keeping with the values of the West, like, as you say, the Enlightenment. So he said that actually this West it goes against the traditional values of many societies around the world, and that it's a very hostile, aggressive, he used the word neo-imperial in its arrogance, in its insistence on imposing its values and its culture on the rest. And that if those who do not adhere to this neoliberal ideology are then subjected to sanctions, color revolutions, coups, and indeed bombs. So he was saying, look, if the West wants to go down this path, it's going to find itself increasingly isolated from the rest of the world. So he's very much saying Russia is in the mainstream, in the global mainstream. It is the West that is isolating itself. So it's the complete opposite from the way that the Western media presented his speech.
And going back to throwing down the gauntlet, no, read what he had to say. Peaceful coexistence. That was the message also. It's live and let live. That's the way you want to do things for your society. That's fine. But the rest of the world, they have other ideas here. Martin, it's for me, it's kind of like a new Orientalism, okay? Because the West wants to say that it has abandoned imperialism and colonialism and all these bad things from white people in Europe. But actually, it's being repackaged. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's being repackaged, it's being remodeled. I thought Putin was remarkably sympathetic to the West. It's as though he had this endearment, this affection for old Europe, and that he would have liked, the whole thing to have gone in a different direction in the last few years, certainly since the early 90s when Soviet Union collapsed. But that didn't happen. And I think what I got from the speech was a sort of a romanticism, a certain reflection on the older days and how Europe and the West could have been so much more close to Russia, that they could have been partners. And almost Putin pitied the old empire, the old the imperial, Western countries that have this colonial history. He almost pitied them, and he almost made the point, he did make the point that we are on a cusp of the revolution. And that word revolution, I think, resonated, because when we think of revolution, you tend to think of bloodshed, you tend to think of colonial powers invading poor countries and setting up administrations and so forth. But that's not really what he's talking about. He's talking about a new world order, which involves we shouldn't really keep calling it the Global South, because it's so much more. It's just the rest of the world. It's just not EU. It's the rest of the West. You know, the West doesn't take up such a great space as people like to think, although it does have the wealth. But the rest of the world is tired of this old model and feels cheated. You know, I mean, I spent a lot of my career in Africa. I spent a lot of my time talking to the economists and the professors who work behind government ministers. And they, you know, constantly talk about this Western model that America has, that, you know, it comes in, it offers financial assistance, aid and trade. Usually that doesn't work. And then you degenerate to a level where countries become so poor that they go to America on their hands and knees and ask for IMF bailouts. At this point, you're completely in America's pocket. You can't do anything. You can't breathe. You can't operate. You are basically a colony. And they're tired of this. They've seen this. And they've seen that this is disingenuous. This is this tawdry, you know, distasteful ideology has just ruined them. And they've been looking for a new world order for an awful long time. But I have to say, watching the speech of Putin, a couple of things struck me. I thought he was in remarkably good shape for a man who, according to Western intelligence agencies, is basically in his last days. You know, or if you want to believe British newspapers, just 4 or 5 weeks ago, it was speculated that he might be dead. And that all these people we keep seeing, you know, are doubles, stunt doubles, you know. I mean, just the second thing that struck me is that I kept asking myself, I wonder how many Western leaders could do that 3-hour stint, you know. And, you know, we skeptical journalists like me, we always think of those kind of conferences as scripted anyway. Most people know the questions beforehand. That happens all over the world. That's not a Russia thing. I saw that for 11 years in Brussels. But, you know, a lot of it seemed to me it wasn't so scripted, because his responses were pensive at times. And he actually even contradicted himself a couple of times when he actually went through the thought process. So I was very impressed with that. But, you know, how many EU leaders could do that 3-hour stint? Could Biden even do it for 3 minutes? I mean, somebody would have to help Biden away from the podium towards
only John Fetterman makes Joe Biden look good. Okay. George, you know, we've already kind of touched on it, but I think it's really important. Putin did say no one can sit out the coming storm. And what I took from that is that because the West has universalized its so-called values, that's the storm that we're all going to have to confront. And no one can sit it out because of this. I mean, it's the universalistic attitude the West has is messianic and it's dangerous.
Yes, no question. And I think it's very instructive, really, to bookend the speech of Putin's with the statement of Jamie Raskin, who is an important congressman in the United States, who essentially declared holy war against Russia.
He called it jihad during our...
Yes, exactly. It was a jihad, because essentially he now had presented Russia as the great Satan, and that there is really no peace is possible with the great Satan, no peaceful coexistence. This has to be a war to the finish. And you know, and Raskin is not an insignificant person in the United States. He's a very important congressman, played an important role in the two impeachments of Trump. He's on the January the 6th committee, and he speaks for a very substantial group of Democrats. And the point is that this is now increasingly how the United States sees its conflict with Russia. And there isn't really any voice in the U.S. countering that. And so, therefore, it's really the West that is now declared Russia to be the enemy. Why is Russia the enemy? Not because Russia is the equal of the United States, but that Russia is the leader of a global coalition that seeks to resist this Western imperialism, the Western ideology, these Western so-called values. That's why this hostility is directed at Russia.
Yeah, I think that's the word. It's the word, actually, resistance. You've hit the nail on the head. I think that's what emerged from this conference. It wasn't that Putin was heralding a new coalition of recalcitrant countries that were going to fight the West. It's just simply resistance. It's just that too many countries are looking for some sort of leadership in the world which opposes this US hegemony, which we put up for so long. And some of these countries have really paid enormously the price for being part of. So I think the word is resistance.
And yes. Well, I think, yeah, but to both of you, I think we can add on resistance to resistance as the resistance is because an alternative is being presented, and an alternative that is not aggressive. It's not aggressive. So, you know, it's my way or the highway. I mean, that's the, no. This is what the how the West has universalized its views. But what we're all talking about is that there is an alternative, and it can. We want to peacefully coexist with you as you go through your fever, George.
Well, yeah, yes, that's right. Well, that's what he's trying to do, because what the West is seeking is to impose its values. There can be no resistance to this. There can be no one saying, well, we don't really go along with it. No, there is only one way to progress for all societies. And that's essentially what Raskin was saying. He just spelled it all out.
And which, I'm sorry, George, have we heard this in the 20th century from someone? No,
we really have. And because Raskin, you know, essentially sounded like the early Bolsheviks. And then therefore, you know, that we are the center of a global revolution. And so, and he said, you know, the resistance to feminism, the resistance to, you know, gay rights, the resistance to, you know, every modish nonsense, it's all centered in Moscow. That's what that we have to slay that. And, you know, and essentially then, you know, for most of the rest of the world, they look and they say, hey, these aren't our values, but the United States is not, you know, accepting of that. I mean, you know, we have U.S. embassies that regularly during Gay Pride Month, you know, flies the gay flag. We have U.S. embassies that hoist murals of George Floyd, a career criminal and a lifelong junkie. So this is not accidental. These are the values the United States seeks to export to the world. It's a very extreme ideology, and it's totally alien to most peoples of the world.
Yeah, and at the same time, we have these elites in the West that are completely oblivious because they cannot see that there could be an alternative to theirs. Because it's a cult. It's very messianic here. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with me. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Revell. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to Martin and Marrakesh. And, in light of what we said in the first part of the program, if we can bring in Ukraine right now. Now, it's been, we talked about it as it was happening. There was very early on in the conflict in Ukraine, the Ukrainians and the Russians sat down in Istanbul. Then Boris Johnson showed up, Western pressure, don't make a deal. If you make a deal, we're not going to back you. For us, this is common knowledge and for our viewers, but that's kind of slowly seeping out over the last couple of weeks. But why is a negotiation impossible? Well, because of the ideology of these elites. You cannot compromise. This ideology does not allow compromise negotiations. It only wants absolute victory. It wants to vanquish. It does not. It doesn't accept an interlocutor that is different, has a different point of view, has different interests. Martin.
And Putin made that point in the speech, if I remember correctly. He said, we've been trying to talk to the Europeans, to the West, for so long now. And his reply was, they simply reply with no. And I think that really sums it up in a nutshell. You know, we have this incredible bigotry from the West. You know, you mentioned that they just don't seem to be able to look at any other options. It reminds me very much of being in a press conference in Brussels in December 1999, when the euro was rolled out. And there was this massive fiberglass model of the euro coin, and a European commissioner jubilant at this, you know, and I mentioned, not in the conference but later to him, is there any contingency plan? And journalists laughed at me. They actually laughed at what a ridiculous question. You know, and we're seeing the same thing here now with Ukraine. There are no options. There are no ABC. There's only one way for the West. They've dug themselves into a hole. It's the way I describe it to people is a rich man who buys a very expensive fake painting. The more expensive the painting, the less inclined the rich man is to accept that it's fake. And I think we've bought into this ideology that we can win in Ukraine. But Ukraine is not really the place where you need to win. Ukraine is just a territory. It's just one country. What we saw with the speech yesterday, the other day with Putin, it was talking about the world and how I think even he was surprised at perhaps how even though the Russians can lose ground in Ukraine, they are gaining ground quite considerably around the world with dozens, if not scores, of these countries who are looking to him. I know are sending representatives to that conference and talking about, you know, this new world order. And I thought it was really interesting how Putin seems to be absolutely hell-bent on keeping this new association, this new coalition, whatever you want to call it, informal as possible. And I think this is the key. I think this is the key to success, because the moment you formalize it, the moment you create expensive, shiny offices in Moscow or wherever, he doesn't want to follow the EU model. He wants to keep it informal because he thinks that's the way of actually bringing more countries into the fold.
Yeah, well, you know, everything is hierarchical, and I think that's what I'm agreeing with you. When you start formalizing, and then it's obvious that the neoliberal elites would say, "See, there's our new enemy." Because George, if you look at people that are sympathetic to what we're talking about here, you know, Africa, Asia, South America. I mean, none of us would foolishly say they're all the same. No, they're not. There's so many different variations here, and it's working on their commonalities. Having enough of Western hegemony, as we Martin said in the first part of the program, is that if you formalize it, then it turns into a hierarchy, and it's a pecking order, and it's just a replication of what the West has already done, and then it somehow becomes an ideology itself. That's antithetical to what we've been hearing in the global South. I agree with Martin. We got to find a different term. The rest of the world. Go ahead, George.
Yes, it is indeed the rest of the world. And the various institutions that Russia has been building up since the demise of the Soviet Union, from BRICS to the other organizations, they all essentially suggest to the rest of the world that there are alternative forms of development. And so the Western powers who have been seeking, you know, hey, come on over to our side. You know, Russia is the enemy. Russia is violating the rules-based order. You know, you've got to be with us. That isn't working, because for the rest of the world, you know, for one thing, they don't see Russia as the enemy. Russia was not the imperial power. I mean, they have experiences of imperial powers and the people who have ruled over them. Russia never ruled over them. And they, you know, they also look back on a long tradition during the Cold War of having good relations with the Soviet Union. They didn't have any time for communism, but they did find that the Soviet Union was not unsympathetic to their problems and their plight, and offered them assistance. And that has helped Russia enormously in the post-Cold War era. And so when Boris Johnson goes to India and demands that you have to be with us, and they think, you know, it just reminds them of their old imperial power. You know, there's reminiscent of the Raj. You know, the sort of, well, we have the British government telling us what to do. And I think that's been a very, very important part of Russian diplomacy, and it's paid extraordinary dividends. Because, you know, however much the West continues to bluster at the United Nations, essentially, it's the same gang always together, and the rest of the world just isn't buying into it.
You know, Martin, it goes back to, it was hotly debated in the 70s and the 1980s about paths to modernization. And of course, there was one school of thought that you can only have true modernization through westernization. And that's being put to the test right now, because by demanding that it must be through westernized, you pull in this neoliberal ideology, okay? It's much more multifaceted than that. And of course, you know, Jamie Raskin, that's already been mentioned here, he can't conceive of that. There's only one path of development. He is truly the 21st century's greatest Bolshevik. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a polarized world, isn't it? No matter how you look at it, if you list look at the EU's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, who got himself into hot water just last week by talking about the EU as a garden and the rest of the world as a jungle. You know, I mean, what the hell is this guy talking about? Is that a glimpse at this kind of elitist mentality from the EU that, you know,
soon... Yeah, but Martin, his follow-up blog, he dug even deeper. Did you notice? Go ahead.
It's just embarrassing, you know, is that a timeline? Is that a milestone of the end of the West? You know, this decline that Putin was talking about, that all these countries are witnessing now, you know, is that some idiotic Spanish socialist says something so racist and so anachronistic and so elitist like that. And you wonder why, you know, that the money of these countries just look at the EU and say, look, we're tired of you coming here. You send your diplomats here and all you talk about is human rights. You know, China comes here and builds schools and roads and hospitals, you know, and invests. So there is this new world order. I thought it was really interesting. The most interesting question that was put to Putin, I watched the whole thing, was I think a Chinese journalist or a Chinese delegate called Mr. Wong, who said, what about this new world order, though? If Russia is to take the lead, and everyone assumes that Russia will, what will the rules be? And Putin really hated this question. He really hated the word rules. What rules? He sort of said, well, you know, I don't think we should talk too much about rules. But in fact, there are rules already that exist. And he cited the UN Charter, which is quite funny, really. You know, but then the UN Charter is a parody. I mean, it's a farcical setup that, you know, the West has broken time and time again. Would it, you know, what are American troops doing in Syria right now? You know, international law is only good as the people who sign up to it. You know, Putin talked about blocks, and he doesn't like trade blocks, actually real blocks in the sense developing in Asia, because he thought that would be a threat to China, and China should be allowed to flex its muscles and develop as much as it possibly can. So, you know, you've got these ideas emerging, and I think that I don't buy this line from the Godfather film that power is something to be taken. I think what we're witnessing now from this speech and in this period during the Ukraine war, and how Russia is actually developing as a geopolitical power because of the Ukraine war, what we're seeing is that power is not taken. Power is actually handed over, if you like. And these countries are all looking to Putin to create a base, to create a central system, so that perhaps all of these small these organizations like BRICS or the SCO, which are growing all the time, perhaps they can all come under some umbrella organization and be formed and have some central place somewhere. You know, people were actually suggesting in that conference that it may not even be Moscow. Could the Russians consider creating a new capital just for to be a center of this organization, but not strong rules, not hegemony, you know, something very, very informal, which will help China accelerate in its economy and Russia to support it. And all these other countries can be part of that. Some of these countries, you know, that want to be part of this new world order are surprising us. Some of them are actually old friends of the West. You know, Saudi Arabia wants to join BRICS, you know, and something that you'll not see reported anywhere in Western media, not even three lines, is that Morocco stood up and defied US sanctions against Russia and signed deals with Moscow just a week ago for nuclear power plants to be built here. You know, that's not being reported by Western journalists, because that flies in the face of the narrative. You know, that is a victory to Russia.
And George, we're rapidly running out of time, but Ukraine is the crucible in this kind of Western ideological crusade. Has almost nothing to do with Ukraine. Again, I don't want to give Raskin so much airtime, but I mean, you and I, and I ask our viewers to take a look at how Raskin sees Ukraine. I mean, this is pure lunacy, okay? But it is purely an ideological construct. There are no real people there. It's a crucible, it's an idea, and this is a sword where the West, I think, could die. It's the hill they may die on, okay? Go ahead.
Yes, that's right. And Raskin does say that victory in Ukraine, you know, is absolutely essential. The future of humanity depends on the victory of in Ukraine. And there's no question. I mean, the West has decided to throw in everything on Ukraine and defeating Russia. It's the West that has said, hey, this is the greatest challenge that we now face You know, our hegemony, our rules-based order is being threatened by this new group of powers led by Russia, and we are going to fight to the bitter end here. That's a high-risk strategy, because if once you've raised the stakes, then you had better win, and if you don't win, then it's really curtains for you.
Yeah, well, then the God failed them, right? Their God failed them. What's so pathetic is the nature of the regime in Kiev, a military junta with 31 flavors of fascists and Nazis, okay? And this is what Raskin and the progressives want to support here. Okay, last 30 seconds, go to you, Martin, go ahead.
You mentioned Ukraine and these white supremacist groups. You know, those are being supported. Those are being endorsed by the European Union. And just the other day, I think it was the day yesterday, the bombing now of the Russian fleet in the Black Sea, that's quite worrying. And I think that's also a signal to all of us that the Kiev regime was never very serious about the grain exports coming out of the Black Sea and supposedly helping starving Africans. That was all fake news produced by the American disinformation machine.
It's just another excuse for escalation. We're all staring into the abyss, but there's only one party that is escalating it. And unfortunately, there'll have to be a reaction. Gentlemen, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, cross-talk rules.